As we try to bring more and more automation to operations, observability is becoming a much more important discipline over time. Dustin Cote, product manager for observability here at Confluent, joins us today to talk about how observability is evolving in Confluent Platform and Confluent Cloud. It's all on today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am, as ever, your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined in the studio today by my colleague, Mr. Dustin Cote. Dustin, welcome to Streaming Audio.
Thanks.
Now, Dustin, you are PM or product manager for a thing called observability. So I want you to tell us what that means. I've seen you. You are visible to the eye. You yourself are observable. So clearly it means something other than that. So tell us what observability means and tell us a little bit about the PM life. What does it mean for you to be a product manager? How did you come into that? I kind of would love to hear that story.
Sure. Yeah. So observability at Confluent is an evolving topic. So we're traditionally observability is thought about like, how can I ask questions of my system and maybe even new questions to get answers about things that I want to know more about. The Confluent, we're not quite totally there yet. We're evolving, and our sort of first step is going to be to enable monitoring the best way that we can so that you can get the answers to old questions repeatedly and reliably, and then we'll move into that space of being able to answer new questions. How did I land in product management? I landed there by working in support for quite a while. I was one of the first support team members here at Confluent, and as time went along, I became more of the support guy who aggregated customer feedback and presented it as market problems. And as a result, I landed in product management because that's what product managers do, is they take
exactly that feedback. That kind of thing is going to get you rewarded with a role as a PM.
Yes. And it's always never thankless.
Well, I mean, you started in support, and Confluent Platform, Confluent Cloud, these are reliable products that people build systems that run parts of the world on. You know, they're like good quality things. But any software breaks or other parts of systems break, you know, and if you thought people didn't like you in support, oh boy, now you're a PM.
That's right. Yeah. So, now it's a wider scope. But I mean, that's the fun part of it. Coming from support, you kind of assume everything is broken all the time, and doing product management for observability, that's a good assumption to have because nothing's ever working 100%.
Right. And nobody is ever pleased with the decisions a PM makes, or at least not all of them.
Exactly.
So it is a tough job, and I appreciate that you do it. Is observability a fancy word for logging?
No, I would say, you know, having good logging can be an aspect of making your system observable. I think Twitter sort of defined observability in terms of these four pillars of like monitoring, logging, tracing, and alerting. I would say that true observability is more like how Honeycomb defines it, which is more that ability to be able to ask new questions about what's going on in the system. Logging is a necessary thing to have, but it doesn't really enable you to ask new questions and solve new problems. It sort of gives you context around what's happening in the system, but you kind of already have to know where to look. And you kind of had to have that foresight to log the right things. So it'll help you solve a problem that has come up in the past, but does it help you solve a new problem that you're coming into in the future? You kind of have to get lucky for it to do that.
Got it. I love those two definitions. Those are two entirely different takes on the problem. One is kind of the functional or task-oriented approach. That's Twitter's. You know, it's monitoring, logging, tracing, alerting. And one is more outcome-oriented. What are we trying to get done here? Don't tell me what we're doing. What are we trying to enable? And that's the ability to ask new questions about what's going on in the system. I think they're both important. And it's kind of funny because I occasionally get feedback from managers that I am too activity focused and I should be more outcome focused. And this is just, I think, an artifact of my training as a software developer. I mean, that's how we are. We think what are the things I have to do? And so we always have an activity orientation, but adding that outcome orientation to the definition, I think, brings clarity.
Yeah.
I want to dig into those four things you said, that Twitter uses to, you know, the activity oriented definition of observability: monitoring, logging, tracing, and alerting. Many of us, you know, me and everybody listening, probably have some idea of what each one of those things mean. I mean, I think I could give you a definition, but I wonder if I'd be right. So why don't you define those for us?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So typically, we start with monitoring because this is sort of also our first area that we're going to approach for Confluent Cloud. So monitoring is sort of, I can get some metrics about what's happening in my system and I can put them on a dashboard. I can see maybe how things are performing at an aggregate level. So for Confluent Cloud or for Kafka, that probably means how many bytes are coming in, how many bytes are going out, and how much is being stored at a given time on the system in terms of bytes. So I think that's sort of the definition, is being able to take metrics for performance that you are aware of, aggregate them, put them in a dashboard, or put them in some consumable way for my operations team to take a look at and say everything looks good at the 10,000 foot view.
Right. Likely on a dashboard. It's like there's a big screen on the wall in a dark room. I look at that screen. That's kind of the mental image.
Exactly. It's the classic sort of operations photograph that you would see.
Sure. A dark room, big screen, irascible people walking around. So
exactly.
About logging.
And then when you go into logging, it's more when something is happening in the system, I get some text-based thing that I can maybe download, or I can look at in like a search tool, like a Kibana maybe, and I can go through and grok about what different parts have happened or what different events have happened in context of the time that they happened. So usually when you're looking at monitoring, it's like a time series with a graph. And then you see something has happened and you'll go and you'll look at the logs at that time to see what actually happened. And you're hoping that the developers that wrote the software had the foresight to put whatever happened into a log message. And yeah, that's kind of
the things you needed. You're hoping they had the foresight to log the thing you need to know, and that logging level was enabled at the time, and so forth.
Exactly.
And some percentage of the time that actually works out. Depending on the subtlety of the problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of, you need to know if a thread died, that's an obvious thing to log. But if a thread was slow, that's a less obvious thing to log.
Or even to be able to know and make a decision to write code to log that. You might not be able to know that.
Exactly.
Tracing
is a...
Sounds like logging to me.
It does sound like logging. But it's traditionally more thought about like in the call stack or when you have these distributed systems where you're trying to hold a thread across different processes. So Kafka is a good one when you're thinking about this distributed tracing idea, where you have one broker that's doing something that affects the other broker. So if I have replication that's happening, I have one broker talking to another, and maybe when I look at the log messages on one broker, I have to then tie those to the log messages on another broker, which is extremely painful. Actually, if you're trying to line up timestamps and things. So distributed tracing kind of helps you see that more readily, I would say. And you can also get into like the function calls in the code. It's again another thing that has to be instrumented though.
Right. That's that I was going to say that clearly sounds like something there where there's not just instrumentation in the process, but also some sort of infrastructure where the tracing messages go, which is of course the case with logging too. You know, these are not always files we're writing to disk. Sometimes this is some kind of centralized service.
Yeah.
And we can sort of elide questions of monitoring and logging infrastructure for now. But tracing really is oriented around like the call stack, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's like I would not show a trace to like an executive or something. It would not it would not go well. You might get away with that, like a log message. Yeah. But right. It's not something that you would typically expose out to, you know, someone who's not already in the technical weeds.
Sure. Although it depends on the executive, because, you know, when you get the person who grew up as a developer and now that's 10, 12 years in their past and they're just all like PowerPoint and Zoom calls and meetings and things like that, you show them a trace, they're like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
And they go back to it. Yeah.
I feel young again.
Yeah. For example, our executives.
Yeah. Maybe sometimes me. That's a little close to home. Okay. Yeah. So tracing is about the path through the call stack that we take. And again, there for any given activity that you're trying to debug, there's lots and lots of call stacks because we're debugging a distributed system here. So there are multiple unsynchronized processors that are executing their own code, but all cooperating. So
exactly.
That trace becomes important. Alerting, I think, again, it seems intuitive, but maybe there'll be a surprise. Tell us what alerting is.
Yeah, an alert is basically when you get a notification that something has happened. The definition varies for different folks, but the definition that I use is an alert is an event that you've been notified about that has a sense of urgency and an action associated with it. If you can't define an alert with those two pieces of information, then what you have is an event. You don't have an alert. So when we're thinking about alerts, that's what we're thinking about here within Confluent Observability. It can be an email, but an email doesn't have a sense of urgency for most people. So usually we're talking about something like a PagerDuty or something that has that sense of this is high priority and this is low priority and can be ignored until the morning.
Got it. An email might be a part of the, you know, the data communications infrastructure that gets the event from the source to your phone, but
right.
It's not, you know, it's 2 p.m. I check my email at 2 p.m. when I get my afternoon coffee. You know, that's not an alert.
Right.
An alert makes the thing in your pocket vibrate or make a noise.
Right. And it can be, you know, that it pokes you and says, this is really important right now. It can be something that you know is low priority at the outset that won't make a noise in your pocket, but it tells you when should you take the action that's associated with this alert. Is it something that needs to happen now or is it something that can happen tomorrow?
Got it. But it is bad, right? You don't alert on a good thing.
You could alert on a good thing. One example is if your usage is unexpectedly high, and now we're going to alert you that if you continue to use this, you might have to spend some more money. But that's not necessarily a bad thing because that means you're probably getting more value than you thought you were out of the platform.
Yeah, no, there's success associated with that, but the purpose of the alert is basically to say, hey, yo, we're gonna take more money, and you want to know that.
Yeah,
act surprised. Got it. Okay, so monitoring, logging, tracing, alerting, all towards the end of giving us the ability to ask new questions about what's going on in the system, and by the system. Explicitly here, we mean, at least in terms of your role as a PM, Confluent Platform and Confluent Cloud. Those are both of the things that you kind of have purview over.
That's it. Yep.
Right. And this is always the case when we talk about strictly Confluent-y things, just for you listening, that running Confluent Platform in your case may substantially be running Kafka. right? There are all kinds of other great and valuable things in it. But if you're a person who's really just interested in Kafka, this is still likely an interesting discussion. And we're talking about Confluent Platform and Confluent Cloud monitoring, but I think there's a lot. I want to try to make sure that we all still learn a little bit about monitoring. So tell us about, in your view, when we look at the hosted services side of things, that would be like Confluent Cloud or whatever hosted service in the last 15 to 20 years of those being a thing in any meaningful way. Tell us about the evolution of the role of monitoring there.
Yeah, I think it's sort of an interesting revelation for me coming from support and looking at the different ways that I used to try to get information out of systems. So the sort of the hosted service that you're trying to monitor now, you're coming at it from a different angle, because when you're running that broker or you're running that service, whatever it is yourself, you need to get into a lot of the details. You need to monitor for things like, if it's a Java service, like garbage collection, right? You need to be able to get those JSTACs out and start looking at stack traces that can tell you where things may be hung up or deadlocked or slow or something like that. Now you're purchasing for somebody to do that for you. So if you have that hosted service, do you care if the system has garbage collection? Or do you care that the system is slow? And where it's heading now, I see a lot more people want to know if that hosted service is hitting what they expected it to, whether that's an SLA or not an SLA. Everybody has in their mind, I should be getting 500 millisecond latency or 50 millisecond latency. And I've been getting it, and now I'm not getting it anymore. So that's really like the level of granularity that you care about. And if you were to see that GC activity was high on broker 4 in my Confluent Cloud deployment, what are you going to do? Is often the question that I get back. Right. You know, are you going to go and try to increase the heap size on that broker? No, because you're paying for somebody else to do that, right?
Right. Do you even have access to a broker? You know, depending on what is that even? We'll talk about that later. But is that even an abstraction you can see?
Right. Or is that an abstraction you even want to see or care about?
Right.
And that's in these hosted services. That's where I've seen it going. Is that, you know, at first when someone onboards into one of these hosted services, they say, "I need to see everything. I need to get there." But then they use it for a little while and they say, wow, I can actually really only focus on the things that impact my business. I don't have to know all of the nitty gritty details. And not only do I not have to know them, I don't want to know them. I want to be focused on like throughput and latency, because those are the things that are going to impact my application that's using this hosted service. And I can really focus on optimizing for those things and not worry about sizes of thread pools and you know, garbage collection algorithms. I can stay away from that stuff.
Yeah, the way I see it, there are two underlying drivers of the broader cloud value proposition, and one is through virtualization in its various flavors. You know, from KVM or VMware on the one end to containers and container management that enables things like AWS Lambda. You know, wherever you are on that virtualization spectrum, the one of the key cloud value propositions is that you should be able to realize lower infrastructure costs through higher utilization, right? Being a cloud provider, you can actually get the physical objects that are servers, that are consuming energy and generating waste heat. You should be able to utilize them more efficiently than you'll be able to if you rack a server and it's a Kafka broker. Right. So one of the key, I'm sort of backing up one or maybe 10 or 15 steps here, but one of the key drivers of why the cloud is useful is that being a cloud provider, you can optimize resource utilization better and offer lower infrastructure costs. The other one, somewhat more apropos to our discussion, is all that stuff is done for you. You aren't operating, tuning a JVM. What's a JVM? So, you put it positively, should you care about that? And it's kind of funny, the slightly more negative phrasing that comes to mind as we're thinking through this for me is, why are you worried about, it's none of your business what the garbage collection is and the heap size and open for maximum file descriptors. Like, what would you care about that? Stop worrying about that. You have an API, right? And this isn't just a Kafka thing. This is like whatever cloud service it is. You have an API. The API has an SLA. Does it do the things? And any kind of operational question, not any kind, but a large chunk of those operational questions of the kinds you've been describing, they all rightly go away. And they let you stop thinking about that and just think more about the program you're trying to write. I mean, that's kind of cloud. It's not even cloud 101. It's cloud 050. It's remedial cloud.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's the next abstraction layer up. I've never used a computer, maybe I'm not from way back, but I've never used a computer at the level to where I needed to worry about what was in that, L1 cache on the CPU. Right. I've never asked that question.
Right.
But this is what the cloud abstraction is getting you to now. You're purchasing a service. This JVM internals is your L1 cache now. It's not something you have to worry about on a day-to-day basis, and you can have people for that. Right. And you purchase people for that.
Yes, you contract with them freely for them to offer their services in exchange for money.
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah, and they're happy to do that as long as they're happy to do it, and then they stop. But right, and like just like there have to be people who are very good at optimizing L1 cache semantics and L1 cache hardware implementation details, we still have to have people who are very good at optimizing JVMs or whatever other runtime is appropriate. People who are amazingly good at operating Kubernetes clusters. These are valuable skills, but most of us aren't making infrastructure. Most of us use plumbing. We don't build plumbing. And that's a good thing. That lets the rest of us, I know I've quoted this recently on the podcast, but my all-time favorite Grady Booch quotation, the history of software engineering is one of an increasing levels of abstraction. From I have to worry about what happens after the chip comes out of reset. Where is the memory location it fetches to run its first instruction? Okay, that's pretty low. I have a REST API and it's supposed to give me this kind of answer within 12 milliseconds. That's somewhat higher and more productive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
How about monitoring on not hosted services? Because we're all getting excited about the cloud, but the reality is not every workload runs in the cloud. Not every workload will run in the cloud for any number of regulatory or engineering reasons. It is not, you are not a bad architect if you build an on-prem system. So talk to me about how monitoring is evolving on-prem.
Yeah, it's definitely getting more sophisticated in terms of these distributed systems. I remember when I started working on distributed systems, it was kind of like, well, JConsole, good luck for a lot of these things. It's really tough when you have like five of those windows open and you're trying to correlate things.
Tim shifts awkwardly in seat, recalling pain.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's evolved pretty well. I mean, if you're using like this self-managed service that you're trying to monitor, I'm talking about monitoring specifically. Like we can go deep on logging and tracing as well in the self-managed world. But for monitoring specifically, it's getting out metrics from your service. It's gotten easier with things like Prometheus, and it's everybody's kind of standardized around these JMX.
Yeah. Tell us what Prometheus is, by the way.
Oh, Prometheus is it's like a time series. It's like a time series database, I guess. And it's a way for you to capture things that are like metrics in a way that makes them easily parsable. So it doesn't actually provide a whole lot of value on its own, usually, business value. It usually you have to throw something like a Grafana on top of it to effectively chart things. And you obviously need a system to monitor for it to be useful. But it does a good job of abstracting away a lot of the complexities of something like JMX, which is the metric service for the JVM, and lets you scrape those metrics out of the JVM and gives you something to query and make charts with and do that monitoring in the business standpoint with. So that's it's not like a brand new technology or anything, but sometimes things that are tried and true are really nice. And so I've seen people get more creative with how they're using that. And I think that, you know, within Confluent Platform, we initially took a stance to try to monitor everything with Confluent Control Center. And the feedback that we've heard is that, you know, it's great. You want to have that opinionated, like, what does Confluent think is important to monitor? But at the same time, if I'm managing things myself, I'm probably not just managing Confluent Platform or even just Kafka. I'm managing other databases. I'm managing other services. And I want to see all of those things in sort of one monitoring system as well. So our sort of strategy has been expanded, I guess, to include this concept of we're going to give you some opinionated view as to what you should monitor and get that out. But also, we understand that people want to integrate. They want to have the metrics just coming into one system so that they can see the 10,000 foot view of their own environments. And then if they want to go into more details or they want to get Confluent's opinion, that's the best things to monitor. Then they can go into Control Center. Or if they're looking at, you know, only these Kafka layer abstractions like topics and those kinds of details, then they can go into that. But the high level, they want to integrate everything. And using technologies like Prometheus is really helping with that.
Got it. And that's, so you're really describing a dual strategy and acknowledging that large organizations build observability solutions. By the way, I think I used the wrong word in asking the question about the evolution of this in the on-prem case. I said monitoring. I should have said observability. So really thinking about observability and that evolution, anybody operating a system at scale is going to build some kind of observability infrastructure, and that's going to have to include things that aren't their Confluent Platform or their Kafka installation. So that gets you to the side of the coin where, like, well, okay, we want to be observable. That is, we want our monitoring, logging, tracing, alerting to be integratable with other things because we know you're going to build your own stuff. But also, when it really comes to managing and monitoring Confluent Platform on-prem, well, we're awfully good at that. We know exactly what that should look like. And so here's our tool, and that's a companion to the broader infrastructure, monitoring infrastructure that you may build. Is that accurately summarizing the product strategy, or am I putting words in Confluent's mouth here?
No, I think you got it. It's we're trying to be complementary to your already existing system. We don't want to be off in some silo that you have to go to only this dashboard to see the things. And then if you want to try something yourself, then go build it yourself. Like, that's not the stance that we're taking. We want to make it easy for you to integrate the Confluent Platform into your own system as well, not just in ours.
Yeah, and that, I think, is particularly wise given the kind of infrastructure that Kafka is. And the very central role that it has this agenda. I always say this: Kafka has an agenda. It wants to be at the middle of things. once some data starts getting integrated with it and, you know, you get some data sources into Kafka topics, you're going to want more data sources into Kafka topics. It's not going to stop. It wants to glue all of the things in your enterprise together. And so, you know, positioning it as this is going to be probably going to end up as very central infrastructure. So let's hold our observability opinions with a loose hand and sort of give you the technical ability to negotiate those with your own approach and your own observability infrastructure.
Yeah, it's kind of like central to the Kafka idea that you're letting everybody consume the same data and sort of democratizing data. It would be a little silly for us to take all of the data about how the Kafka itself is performing and then just siloing it. It would be kind of strange.
In terms of what has happened, because the way you talk about this is the, you know, we're not done, we're evolving, we're getting there, which by the way is great PM language to use. I mean, every PM feels like, oh boy, these are so many things that we have to get to.
It's always forward-looking statements.
It is always forward-looking. And, well, we want to be careful with those. You are not the first PM I've interviewed on this show, and I'm not going to ask you, tell us what's exciting that's coming up next in the product, because, you know, no, we don't do that. But maybe you do, but probably not on podcasts. What's exciting that has happened so far this year? So at the time we're recording this, 5.3 is a thing. Confluent Platform 5.4 has not been released. Very likely by the time you're listening to this episode, 5.4 has been released. I'm never quite sure about when each episode ships. Those things move around a little bit. So when we're talking about 5.3. What are some things that you're super happy about or even just moderately happy about that have happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we've had a couple of things that I'm pretty pleased with. So one thing that we did specific to Confluent Cloud was we ran a little preview about how we're going to expose metrics to our Confluent Cloud users. And as a PM, one thing that you get excited about is user feedback. And we got the user feedback that putting these metrics into a Kafka topic is not what people want. It was really great feedback, actually.
That strikes me as actually the perfect thing to do, but it turns out I'm wrong.
Yeah, and we get to make hypotheses and test them out, and you know, coming back through that scientific
part
method.
Of that is yeah.
So that was really kind of cool and enlightening for customers to come back and say, no, actually, we just want to get metrics over this HTTP protocol in the old boring way, and can we just have that? And so that's one thing that I'm pretty excited about is we're getting out into a preview that's going to include metrics over HTTP that are really about your clusters and your topics. We know also from that preview that people, they thought that they wanted brokers, and then when they got the broker level kind of metrics about Confluent Cloud, they realized they couldn't do anything with them. And so that whole stump speech that I have about you don't really want to know about your infrastructure is actually backed up with customer feedback, where we gave them the details about the infrastructure, and when they couldn't get actions on that data, they basically said, we want the business value, we want the business level metrics, and give us those. So that's what we're delivering out to a preview, and I think that's going to be very exciting for customers.
Excellent. And that's cloud, you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's for Confluent Cloud.
How do you get access to preview features? If you're listening to this and you're like, oh yeah, I want that.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. And you know, one way is if you're already a customer, then send us in a support ticket and ask. It's a really great effective way. Another way is, you know, we have our Slack, and our community Slack, and I'm always, you know, in there and happy to be tagged. And if somebody has a request or a question, then absolutely just give the feedback. We always want that feedback. And the last way is for our open previews, you will see it in the UI. Would you like to join the preview? And you can start the preview with a click of a button.
Nice. And it sounds like there will have to be some documentation on this. I mean, it's an HTTP interface, so I have to know how to access it. Somebody's going to give me an endpoint. There'll be formatting and all that stuff. But there's docs in product that I can look for that.
Exactly. It's hard to communicate JSON schemas over a podcast.
Let us not. The one thing that we're not going to do is that thing right now. So good. Dustin said he's findable in Slack, and make sure you just look, you just get the spelling of his name in the show notes. I said the last name is pronounced Cote, but it's C-O-T-E. So if you're a native English speaker, you probably think Cote. But yeah, look him up in Confluent Community Slack. He's your guy for this kind of thing. I want to be very careful with this question. I'm not asking you to tell us about the roadmap for observability in Confluent Platform and Confluent Cloud, but a little bit more theoretically, you have that PM sense of unease with the present and optimism about the future, maybe not even optimism about the future, but just sort of an anxiety to get to the future state, which is really what a lot of what your role is about. I mean, a lot of it is having people tell you they don't like your decisions and meeting with customers and getting surprising feedback from them, like topics are a bad place for this kind of information. We want HTTP interface, you know, so stuff like that. But in terms of your mapping out the future, it's all about, you know, there's this anxiety that things aren't done yet. So without telling us anything about when or release numbers or anything like that, what do you think has to be there for a properly observable cloud service and a properly observable on-prem service? What ought those things to look like?
I like that question. That's right in the PM wheelhouse, Tim. Excellent. I think that there's really two things that we're kind of concerned with. One of them is we want to get to the point where monitoring APIs and seeing metrics can be done with a similar API for people that are self-managed and people that are using Confluent Cloud. And the reason for that is there's, like you said, some workloads that are never going to the cloud. And there are a lot of workloads that make sense in the cloud. And a lot of those workloads come from the same customer. You know, I have some that I can run in the cloud and some I can't. And to really make a good, you know, solution for monitoring, you want to get to, I can do it in one way for all my systems, because nobody wants to deal with the code liability of integrating things in many different ways. That's sort of also a core value prop of Kafka itself.
Right. As a piece of integration infrastructure, there's one API and you get all the integrating done that way.
Exactly. And the second one is sort of evolving thinking beyond dashboards and evolving beyond log search. I think getting to the point where for each request, if I decide that there's something strange happening or there's something that happens every once in a while, that I can turn on some kind of sampling or turn up sampling in for every request that's going through my system, I can see the information about, okay, where is it heading to? What sort of job is it doing? How long is it taking to do each hop in the request path? And try to get down to that detail dynamically. Because you never know when a problem is going to pop up, but you do know once a problem is occurring, or even in peacetime, you might just want to check on some things to see if there's anything insidious sort of lying beneath. And so being able to allow people to dynamically increase the sampling rate on their system, and getting to each request has a certain set of criteria that are associated with it. And the analogy to, or the way this applies to Kafka is sort of, if for people familiar with this, the request log, which actually logs metadata about each request. So getting down to that level of detail, putting that somewhere that people can then query, I think that's where you get to the final boss of observability, where you can see down to as granular as possible what's happening with each request. I think that's sort of the holy grail. And like you said, timelines, obviously that's getting to the end state, but that's sort of where we're trying to get in terms of a North Star view.
My guest today has been Dustin Côté. Dustin, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
And there you have it. Hey, it's Kafka Summit time again, and you get another discount code for listening all the way to the end. Kafka Summit London is coming up on April 27th and 28th of 2020, and you can get 30% off your registration if you go to kafka-summit.org and use the discount code KSL20AUDIO during checkout. Just enter KSL20AUDIO while registering at kafka-summit.org, and that 30% off is all yours. I would love to see you there. And anyway, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss the podcast or ask a question, you can reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's at TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out to us in community Slack. There's a Slack sign-up link in the show notes if you want to join that group. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. If you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast, which we think is a good thing. Thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.